both of them, or just
different form or same?
It's the same.
Same form. Yeah, we just back off. So
okay, that's good. That's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you. Is that on? Good.
Yeah. That's true.
Let's
right.
It's on record.
Was the traffic bad?
No, actually, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So, when is this project due for you guys?
So the interview is due tomorrow.
Okay.
But the written part is due probably like the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
So
cool. Are you guys looking to go into like video game development, or is this just like?
So, this is our like one of the first questions. So so we are studying this history. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Anybody?
All right. Then. If you're ready.
We're studying the history of video games,
mm-hmm.
and one of our really main focus was like arcades. Old games. So
mm-hmm.
right now we're doing a project on that. So that's why we are doing this interview. So
cool. Very cool.
Just to repeat myself, my name is Sunny, and this is Zach, and we're students at IIT and currently study it. History of video games. Thank you for coming here with us.
Oh, no problem.
So you kind of just ask us. We're going to ask you, like, do you have any questions? But we just kind of just ask.
Okay,
you.
Sure, yeah.
Cool. So when did you first start playing pinball?
Pinball?
Yeah.
Wow. Let's see. Pinball actually came a little bit later because actually I started playing video games first.
Right.
Like, you know, like upright cabinets. Pinball probably maybe when I was like 8 or 9.
Okay.
And the first one I ever played was probably Pinbot. And that was probably like 87, 88.
Okay.
So that was a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But pinball never really grabbed me. I was more like not so much playing, but I liked observing because I wasn't that good at it. So I liked observing other people, like older kids play.
Right.
Because they were really, really talented in the lights and the sounds and the flashing and everything.
Right.
It was really cool.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm.
so the first game that you ever played
mm-hmm.
was, what was, not pinball, right? What was
did you remember? Probably the Star Wars game, the one with the vector graphics. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
Okay.
It's basically, if you guys have seen the movie, it basically reenacts the final trench run on the Death Star.
Right.
Yeah, and so it was all with vector graphics, and that was the first game I ever played. And
okay,
yeah.
mm-hmm. and I'm guessing then pinball is one of your favorite game, or
actually I still love going to arcades and
right.
playing. I mean, you don't see them much, you know, these days, but there are a few places in Chicago that
right.
are still keeping classic arcade cabinets,
okay.
you know, maintained, and you can play them. So
okay,
mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a good pinball game? Is it the effects? Is it the way
That's a tough one because
yeah.
I think it all comes down to like personal preference. For me, one of the cool things about a pinball game is like if it's got a really cool theme
right.
or really great aesthetic design.
Okay.
One of my favorite classic pinball machines is the Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know, the old 1930s horror movie.
Right.
What really makes that one great is that you know, it's pretty modest when it comes to effects on the actual pinboard, but on top of the machine is this really great plaster casting of the actual monster, and the eyes light up every time you get a
right,
big score.
Right,
so it's really, it's got that really great aesthetic design. I think like with anything, it just has like a good pinball machine has a good personality,
right.
like has good character, and I think that's one of the coolest things.
Okay.
So.
So, what are all the games that you've earned a record on? For
you can actually look. There's an actual website that keeps record of all. It's called arcade.com. It's A-U-R-C-A-D-E .com. And basically what it does is that, you know, there are certified scorekeepers and referees that, you know,
right.
that keep a record of all your high scores. I currently hold 10 high scores right now. They're almost all fighting games.
Yeah, okay.
the, some of the more memorable ones are Capcom versus SNK2, X-Men Children of the Atom, and then Samurai Showdown 1 through 4, and Ninja Baseball Batman. That one just came this month. Well, October, so.
And so all those records, was Pinball one of the few of them?
Not really. Like I said, I more just like to admire the, like other people play, but the arcade where I go, they just added a pinball section.
Right.
They have over 70 original arcade pinball machines, and they had to keep them in storage because what they're doing now, they're undergoing a renovation, and they're making room for more pinball machines, so they didn't have them out for people to play. But now, you know, as time, they've, you know, started the first phase of the renovation, and now they put the pinball machines back in. So.
Okay. I see. How do you train for those games that you just talked about? Like, how long does it take to, like, to kind of get good at one?
Well, I mean, with fighting games, that's just been a lifelong love affair for me. Like, Street Fighter 2 came out in 1989, you know, no, not 89, 91.
Right.
And, you know, the first time I played that game, it was like a love affair. I was like, wow, this game's great. It's so cool. It's, like, so much fun. And then, you know, you start to learn and you play. And then, basically, over time, like, you know, those games made by Capcom, the mechanics have largely stayed the same. You know, like, the special moves, the timing, the button layouts, all that mostly has been preserved and stayed the same.
Okay.
So basically, my skills to this point, you know, on those fighting games all come from being, you know, in eighth grade and playing Street Fighter. And then just as, you know, Capcom kept making more iterations of Street Fighter or, you know, the Versus series like Marvel vs. Capcom or Street Fighter and X-Men, you know, those things just stayed the same. They just put more mechanics on top of it. And so it's just learning the new things while keeping your old skills fresh.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you started out around like 8th grade?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right, like 6th, 7th, 8th grade. That was the time when, you know, friends, you know, you would, you know, friends would, obviously we couldn't drive, so we would get on our bikes and we would bike to the local arcade or the local 7-Eleven and anywhere they had an arcade cabinet for us to play.
Okay,
so.
How about like the people that you observe in the really really good players? Like, do you ever ask them like how long do you play or like how do you get sure techniques or like because to really really be one, you have, like do you guys like hang out with the same group to sure techniques?
Well, specifically for fighting games. That's been a great thing. The internet has been a real blessing for people who want to, you know, learn and not just, you know, for video game, but like any kind of skill or learn about people who are good in their region. You know, the things like YouTube or, you know, like websites dedicated to like video game fandom. Me myself, I've been a huge fan of the fighting game community, and you know, Chicago is known for being in a smaller, kind of a smaller, smaller branch of the fighting game community because it's mostly East Coast and West Coast. But I have been lucky to travel to like you know the big competitions like Evo in Las Vegas or to see like professional players play. Like I'm sure you've heard names like Justin Wong, Seth Killian. You know these kind of names, and then you see their replay matches on online or on YouTube. And I've actually been lucky to meet you know a few of these individuals at conventions or at tournaments, and it's been really great just to like talk and just get to know them as people, but then also to see you know how they train and how they play and how much time they dedicate to that. So that's specifically for fighting games. Yeah.
I see. So is there like a record that you see other people are like you know hold it and you just really wanted to like hold or like or
get a shot at it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, here's something I should definitely share with you guys. Just west of Chicago in Brookfield, Illinois is an arcade known as Galloping Ghost Arcade. That's at 9415 Ogden Avenue. And that is where you know a lot of my friends that I've met through the arcade that's where they go to play, to hang out, and to, you know, just to play games and to, you know, achieve world records. And it's a real honor to see these guys, just set so many world records at so many different kinds of games. A lot of those guys really like those shooters, you know, the bullet hell games. They love those. Just a great variety of different kinds of games, and they're very, very talented. So, like, when you see them play, or when they're streaming online for their, you know, a world record attempt, it's always great to see them play, and then kind of just ask them, you know, how do you play, like, you know, strategies or little tricks and tips, and seeing some of those guys play is really impressive. Just like I could never do what they do.
Oh wow! Okay.
When it comes to like those kind of games. All right. So.
I see. Mm-hmm. So for for those fighting games, why do you specifically choose that game? Is it because it's or pinball in this matter? Like, why do you specifically choose the mechanics? You know.
Why not, like you said, different kinds of games?
Yeah.
Something about, I mean, as someone who's been playing video games like his entire life, I love different kinds. I love music games, rhythm games, shooters, action adventure, you know. And, you know, games that have been only on consoles, like, you know, like The Legend of Zelda or Super Mario Brothers. I'm a huge fan of video games in almost any genre or any type. But something about fighting games is just, like, poetry. It's, like, a really great thing. Seth Killian made this really great analogy about video games relating it to poker.
Right.
It's not, you're not so much playing the game as you are playing your opponent.
Right.
And so I think it's like this really great idea it's a whole bunch of things. It's like the artwork that goes into it, the mechanics that go into it, the personalities that play the game.
Right.
It's this whole swirl of this of ideas and concepts that mash together. It's in a kind of cheesy sense. It's like being romantic of that system and that world.
Okay,
so.
I see. Mm-hmm. And you really really like the psychological.
Yeah,
aspect.
Like a lot of pro players in the fighting game circuit are also poker players.
Right.
Really good poker players, and that whole idea of not playing the cards that are in front of you, but playing the opponent, and it's just that, you know, that psychological warfare, and that's a really cool aspect, you know, to bring to this entire thing. When you think, oh, it's just a video game, or oh, it's just a card game, well, no, it's, you know, it's like it's psychological warfare, and it's a really cool aspect of
it.
So,
okay. Do you play poker?
I do, actually.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Interesting. Huge fan of Texas Hold'em, and like watching, you know, like the World Series of Poker and all that. So
I see.
So I'd actually like to ask something here. I know when we saw a little bit of an interview with Justin Wong, he said that his parents just didn't know what he did.
Absolutely,
was that nearly the same for you?
I mean, my parents were pretty aware of, you know, what I was doing with my time, and like the first video game system I ever owned was an Atari 2600, and they're the ones that purchased it for me. And, you know, as I grew older and as time went on, you know, I got that great education in video games, you know, the 8-bit Nintendo Entertainment System, and then Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, and then, you know, as we made more friends, like growing up in middle school and high school, we would cultivate friendships, like, oh, this guy's got a TurboGrafx, or this guy's got, you know, like Neo Geo, and they're like, oh, okay, we'll go over to his house, and then he'll bring his system over, and so we got this really great, you know, wide spectrum of video games. We all got to play, we all got to learn, and, you know, that's how we fostered friendships. And that was how, you know, we learned, like, the whole spectrum. And so my parents were aware I was going to a friend's houses, sleeping over, playing video games and whatnot. So they, for the most part, they were pretty aware. They were not entirely thrilled with it, but, you know, they were aware.
Okay.
Do you think that that kind of environment, that group aspect of, you know, hey, I'll grab my stuff and go over to his house, do you think that still exists today?
I mean, it doesn't exist in that form, but in just a different way. Like, I mean, so many things that are, you know, that the internet has either transformed or forced to, you know, into, like, obscurity, that happens. I mean, of course, you guys, I'm sure you guys have video game systems. You got Xbox Live, you got PlayStation Network, you got all that stuff. And it's great because you can play with people around the world and, you know, and have that social aspect, but it's something very different than having, you know, four guys on the same couch, you know, switching controllers and you know, trash talking right next to each other. That, you know, that's one of those aspects that is preserved when you go to a place like Galloping Ghost in Brookfield. Like, you know, when you're playing a fighting game, you guys got to share the same cabinet,
mm-hmm.
and you got to jockey for elbow room to get hit the buttons and everything. And that's a great aspect. That social aspect is what's lost. You know, it's not so much lost, but it's kind of transformed when you do it over Xbox Live over the internet. So, yeah.
So, do you remember your first World Warcraft attempt or like first competition that you ever did?
That's funny, actually. 2 years ago, no, actually 3 years ago now, when Galloping Ghosts first opened, they were just casually like taking down records, you know, in-house records for certain video games. And on my first visit, I actually set the house record and world record for Tekken 4 and for Capcom versus SNK2. And then so through the course of time over these past 3 years, Tekken 4 is way out of my reach now. Somebody beat that game in less than 2 minutes. And so I don't think I'll ever touch that. But so a friend of mine at the arcade and me have been going back and forth on Capcom versus SNK2 for like the last 3 years. Like he'll set a score. 3 months later, I'll come back and play, and so I'll set a score, and it goes back and forth. Right now, I'm currently holding it with a world record of like 3,062, and he's in second at like 2,700.
Okay.
So I'm sure he's training right now and trying to get it right back. So
okay,
mm-hmm.
Was it like we was watching the movie? Was it like a nervous feeling or just chill? It wasn't.
It's kind of weird because it's like if you go there with the intention of it can be a totally random thing. Like sometimes you'll set the record in the first attempt, and then sometimes you won't get it like the whole night, and then you know, it's just kind of you know, it's like alchemy. It just kind of all comes together or it doesn't. So it's just when you feel like you're in the zone and you're playing well and things are just coming together, and then it happens, and then sometimes it just doesn't.
Right.
So it just, it'll depend.
I see.
So.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Are you based in Chicago? Are you born
actually, I was born in this country. I was born in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then I grew up, I lived in Evanston until I was about 5 years old. I moved to Northwest Indiana. And then I lived in Indiana until I graduated from high school. And then I did my undergrad at Indiana University in Bloomington, down south.
Right.
Then I moved to New York for a couple of years. That's actually where I met Justin Wong at
mm-hmm.
New York Chinatown
mm-hmm.
Fair. And that was shortly before he moved to California. And then I lived in San Francisco for a little bit, and that's where I met, you know, some other great top players like John Choi and Albert Carmona, like these guys who are, you know, really deep into the scene. And then came back to Chicago.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm. All right. You like
here? Oh yeah, Midwest. Like as someone who's been able to live on both coasts and
mm-hmm.
see what they all offer. I mean, New York is a great city. San Francisco is a great city, but something about Chicago just is really great. It's really it feels like home.
Right.
And the great part about it is that, you know, time was that, you know, everyone just was concerned what was happening on either the East Coast or the
mm-hmm.
West Coast, and then the news would come towards the Midwest. You know, now Chicago is becoming more prominent in a lot of different areas. You know, like in culture and food and entertainment and especially in video games. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but NetherRealm Studios, the studio that was responsible for the Mortal Kombat games,
mm-hmm.
they were formerly known as Midway Games, and they were based in Chicago, and they were on California and in the Avondale neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
They were across the street from the... I don't know if you guys ever had hot dogs in California, the hot dog stand?
Mm.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they recently just closed, and so Midway was right across the street from the hot dog stand, and, you know, they have the great culture there of, you know, of these video game developers in this city. Iron Galaxy is another studio that's based in Chicago. They're responsible for the Killer Instinct series on Xbox One. And Divekick. And you have a lot of smaller indie gamers, like indie game studios here that are working and trying to make a name for themselves. So yeah, there's a really great, rich video game culture, you know, in the city, so it's pretty great.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Does living in Chicago really impact how you play games, or...
Like I said before, when you meet, you know, top players, they're always either in this country, they're always either East Coast or West Coast, and so like Chicago, China has to, they have to fight a little harder to get a little bit name recognition. One thing I will say is the fact that you know, having NetherRealm in Chicago, like, there's a team of professional, that arcade I mentioned, Galloping Ghosts, what they do is they sponsor a pro team.
Right.
And that pro team always takes top honors at, you know, at Injustice and at Mortal Kombat. And they always want to hold up that reputation,
right,
because it's like, you know, this is our game.
Right.
This is our town. This is our, you know, this is our scene. And I think that's, you know, that just makes it that much more of a better competition,
right,
with, like, other people from around the world competing at, like, Evo or, you know, any other big tournament. So,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So you play at any you play at some Temple or Coin Op league? Is are you, you know?
Oh no league. I just like to go check out, like, different places that actually have, you know, the cabinets or the pinball machines. Like, I'm sure you've been to places in the city, like Headquarters,
right,
or Emporium Arcade,
mm-hmm,
or where else? There's another one. I can't think of it. Anyway,
yeah,
those are the two big ones that I can think of. And then, of course, Galloping Ghost out in Brookfield.
Okay.
Because it's not just, you know, going to play the game, but also, like, check out,
right,
you know, the bar that it's in, and, like, you know, get a feel for the place and what the owners are like and things,
yeah,
like that. So,
okay.
Several minutes ago, you kind of mentioned, you know, sometimes you just go in and you play it and then you can,
yeah,
set the world record.
Yeah.
But do you really have a plan, like, plan and figure it out? Or, like, is there, like, a specific steps that you...
Oh, I see. It depends on the game. Like, for a fighting game, it's just, you know, just knowing that as you progress through each level, it's like, okay, the computer, this, when the computer picks this character, they're always going to fall into this specific pattern, and then you can always, you know, you can outsmart it or know what, you know, when they're going to attack, and you can counterattack and, you know, things like that. When it comes to games like a Ninja Baseball Batman, that's more of a, like, a side-scrolling beat 'em up, and so it's basically just having a strategy and just knowing, like, it comes down to repetition,
mm-hmm,
and just knowing, like, well, these enemies come out at this time,
yeah,
they do this kind of damage, so you either have to avoid them or take them out before they attack. So it's just kind of, it comes down to, you know, muscle memory and rote memorization.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the future of CoinOp? Like, do you think that, you know, it will just continue, or you think that it's still growing?
That's the thing, like, you know, in countries like Japan where you see they're still innovating, you know, it's slightly waning, but it's still kind of a sustainable market there. I don't know if you guys read over the weekend, but Luigi's Mansion, that game from Nintendo,
mm-hmm,
Capcom has actually, they've actually built an arcade cabinet,
wow,
starring Luigi's Mansion. So in that way, you know, you still see that kind of innovation and, you know, being built and stuff. But as a whole, as an industry, I don't see it, like, resurging back anytime,
right,
soon. We kind of just have these places where, you know, you have a bar,
yeah,
and then somebody's gone to the trouble to bring back classic cabinets,
right,
or classic pinball machines. And, you know, that's kind of the appeal, this kind of retro appeal of, oh, this is cool, let's play Mortal Kombat on the original,
right,
cabinet, or let's play NBA Jam on the original cabinet, or let's play a couple games of pinball.
Right.
So I don't see it coming back as a full
yeah,
industry, but there are, you know, these pockets of people that are just keeping it, like, sustaining it and keeping it alive. Like,
yeah,
just last weekend, a new pinball company just released a new Walking Dead pinball machine,
mm-hmm,
and I went to see it. It's a very nice pinball machine, and it looks nice, and I just don't see if they're going to be cranking out tons of these,
right,
but it's just nice to know that, you know, it still exists in that form. It's mostly going to be people who are going to keep it as a novelty or as, like, a kind of, as a niche market.
Okay.
So,
is there, like, is there a major change, like 10 years ago and now, like, before you mentioned bars, like, do you,
mm-hmm,
still do that, like, 10 years or 20 years ago when it was still popular? Is there, like, a major change, or...
I mean, like I said before, like, you know, the internet is basically taken away, and then, you know, the whole home console video game industry, that it got so good over time that it, not only you could play anything you wanted that you could in the arcade,
right,
it surpassed it and was even better in a lot of cases, and that's
okay,
why, you know, that went away. Currently, I see, you know, fingers crossed that, you know, people who, like, own places like Underground Retrocade or, you know, these kind of barcade kind of places,
right.
I'll hope that they'll, you know, kind of keep that alive and just kind of, you know, maintain it, because it's hard to believe, but there's actually a lot of innovation, a lot of creativity that's still that's you can still find in arcade machines that you can't see, you can't replicate
right.
that experience on a home console.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed that'll be still be preserved for years to come.
Okay.
So
I see.
Mm-hmm. Do you own any, you know, foreign games from?
Oh, import games. Yeah. this was a thing in college. We discovered my friends and I discovered that we could solder chips to our PlayStations and our Dreamcasts and basically make them, you know, region free. And that was another great way to discover, you know, well, what do Japanese people, like, how do they approach gaming and, like, what's culturally different? Funny story, I actually drove from Bloomington, Indiana, all the way to Arlington Heights, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
to have my PlayStation 1 modified. And I picked up a copy of Tekken 3, which just came out in Japan and still wouldn't come to the U.S. for another 4 months. And I did that. It was a 4-hour drive, and I did it in one day.
Okay.
And it was just a great thing to have that at the time. Just culturally and, you know, seeing the differences between, like, a Japanese game ported to a U.S. market or seeing a game that would never come to the U.S. market because it's deemed too foreign.
Right.
This is a great way to see, you know, cultural differences and, you know, game differences between, you know, Japan and the U.S.
Okay.
So,
you know, which culture do you kind of lean towards?
Is
it like the Japanese or like the Americans?
I mean, it's all swirling together.
Yeah.
Like, because at this point, a great example of this is, I don't know if you guys ever played Gears of War.
Mm-hmm.
Gears of War, the lead developer, Cliff Bleszinski, always said, you know, huge influence and an example that he took was from Resident Evil 4,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, that's a very Japanese game.
Yeah.
And so they would just go back and forth and just, like, having these ideas, you know, cross-pollinate with each other and having, you know, ideas just being exchanged freely. And that's the really great thing, that, you know, it's no longer Japan is the one where they're the ones making all these great innovative games. The U.S. and the Europe are making these really terrific games too, and they influence each other, and that's a really good
okay.
thing to see.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe, like, the people in, you know, the field that you play? Are they, like, you know, with CoinUp, are they, like, kind of a little bit more, you know, a little more social? A little more social than other people? Like, guys
mm-hmm.
who just stay home and play console, or, like, are they just normal people, or, like, is there any really interesting facts about that you...
I think, like, the crew that I play with at Galloping Ghost, they're a really diverse bunch. Like, one of them is, in his spare time, he's a musician for a band, and, you know, he plays with his wife. Another guy just had his first baby, and, you know, he's just experiencing fatherhood for the first time. Another guy just got married, and, so, basically, you know, you get these guys, they're very social, very friendly. You know, they come to the arcade just to unwind and play and, you know, maybe set a world record or two.
Yeah.
But they're very, you know, they're just very normal guys. They're not, like, social misfits or anything like that. But it's very cool to see that, you know, they have lives outside of the arcade and they have, you know, they're very just plugged into society and everything. And so, that's
right.
Good.
So you went to like East Coast or like West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a huge difference between Chicago, East Coast, West Coast, like the scene, or pretty much it's the same?
I mean, at its core, like the core elements and the core, like, it's pretty much the same.
Okay.
I think it's just a level of intensity and like the degree of dedication that people, you know, bring to it. Like when I was living in New York, going to New York's Chinatown Fair where Justin Wong would play,
mm-hmm.
you would see not just him, but, like, a whole bunch of great guys coming to play. And it was maybe, like, every time I was there, they would always be there.
Nice.
And they were always dedicating so much time and fostering, not just fostering those relationships and friendships with all the people around them, but like really honing their skills, you know, like eliminating their mistakes,
right.
You know, just making themselves ready for like tournament play when it came down to it. I think it just comes down to just the level of intensity. Like
right.
Chicago is just a smaller scene,
yeah.
So it's a little harder to garner that kind of excitement, but it's the same, at its core, it's still the same.
Okay.
So.
Do you play with a family member or almost your family or just pretty much cousins or anything?
Mostly, let's see, like, I'm at this point in my life where it's, you know, it's harder and harder to devote free time for
right.
like pursuits like this, so it comes really infrequently. Like, I'll go over to someone's house when their kids have gone to sleep,
okay.
and we'll stay up and play,
okay.
or we'll play online,
right.
you know, through Xbox Live or PlayStation Network. Yeah, just, it's, at the same time, it's great to have all this technology, but then, like, when you have faced with real world responsibilities of,
right.
like, you know, making, paying the bills, and you know, getting to work and all these kind of things, it's hard to make time for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for me personally, I keep that going even though it's kind of difficult because
right.
that's like the only way I can keep in touch with some
yeah,
friends
yeah,
who have
yeah.
you know, fully gone into adulthood, you know, with full-time jobs and spouses and kids and stuff like that. So
okay, I
mm-hmm.
see. Did you expect that, you know, a few of the games that you play have a high level of entry? Like, do you expect it was going to be competitive when you first start? Or it was just, like, a first start from a hobby, and then later you realize that
mm-hmm.
that was competitive?
Yeah, that's kind of shocking. I mean, when you think about it, Street Fighter,
yeah.
Street Fighter 4 is now in its fifth iteration.
Right.
And it's hard to believe that people are still playing this game, which is basically the same one that it was in back in 1991. It's really shocking to me to think that now people are making not just, you know, not just a living from it, but like a really successful, like
yeah.
a career out of it. Not just fighting games, of course, but things like, you know, League of Legends, that's
mm-hmm.
huge.
Yeah.
That competitive gaming scene. I think it's great. I think it's a really wonderful thing to see that flourish, and that's
mm-hmm.
kind of guarantees that, you know, gaming was kind of looked down upon as this
right.
kind of bad thing, but, you know, people thought the same thing of, like, television and
yeah.
movies back in the day, so it's like, well, you know, I'm glad that that culture exists. I'm glad that people are able to innovate and, like,
mm-hmm.
as move that forward as a career, as a... Yeah, it's a field of entertainment, so
right.
I think that's really great.
Okay, just curious, like, do you play League of Legends or
I've
kids.
Or yeah, yeah. I've, like I said, I love playing all different kinds
right.
of games, and I just gave it a shot just to see what it was like, and I was like, yeah, this is actually pretty cool. I don't think I could ever be, you know, in that competitive nature, that competitive circuit, but you know, it's always definitely fun to play because I just love seeing the innovation. And, you know, where the creativity comes into play. And I think that's a really good thing to have.
Right.
Like, I'm from Korea, and,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, the big thing there is
right.
still StarCraft. And, you know,
yeah.
they love, you know, playing professionally. And like, it's insane how popular,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is over there. You see guys that are sponsored by big corporate sponsors
right.
like Samsung and LG, and they're wearing, like, these all
yeah.
coordinated track suits and all this stuff, and they all hang out together, they train together and all this
yeah,
stuff, so
yeah.
it's kind of cool to see that.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I see. So, you kind of mentioned that, you know, arcade game or pinball games or
mm-hmm.
any of those games is the way how you maintain some of the friendships that
mm-hmm.
you have, but is there, like, a more personal reasons why you still kind of go with it, or... Even though you have more responsibilities
mm-hmm.
when you grow up, or is
I don't know, something about it. Like, a friend of mine actually asked me a few years ago. He's like, "Do you ever see yourself like fully giving up video games?"
Yeah,
and I was like, thought about it for a second. I was like, you know, I really can.
Yeah,
like even if I'm not playing like at the arcade or on a home console. Like, video game culture is still around me. Like, I still
yeah.
like listening to video game soundtracks,
yeah.
Seeing video game artwork from, like, different studios and artists.
Yeah.
like that aspect of video game culture is still around me, and like I think as like me personally as a player, I would love to keep playing because I think it's a valid form of entertainment, and you know, it's definitely. I mean, there was this whole thing back a few years ago that Roger Ebert made this thing like video games are not art, and then people jumped all over him whole thing, and I think that mostly went away. It's just. I think, you know, for me personally, I do believe that it's an art form because there's just so much creativity and so much passion that goes into it, and it just influences people in these really wonderful ways that you can never imagine.
Yeah.
And I look at it as also not just a form of entertainment, but as a form of art, and I love to see that and be influenced by that and see how people like to continue to move it forward.
Yeah. So is there like a specific game where like it kept with you for the past 20 years that you just don't see yourself get bored of it, like just keep going?
Fighting games.
Yeah.
Like if there is any genre of game that I would like give even like a little bit of leeway to, it's fighting games. Like of course you got Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, you've got KOF, King of Fighters, you got Samurai Showdown, you got all these wonderful games, and then you have like licensed ones like for Injustice, and you have there was a Ninja Turtles game back in the day that I loved, and something about fighting games is really terrific genre, and I don't ever see myself playing. I might give up other kinds of games, that'll be the last one I ever give up.
Okay,
so
I see.
I mean, you play a ton of games. like, were there ones that you started to play and you went, no, I don't like this game. And do you know maybe why that would have been?
I think at first, when I first saw my friends playing games like, role-playing games, like Final Fantasy.
Like,
watching it is a very boring experience.
Yeah.
Like, seeing it, unless you're the one playing, you're not the one gaining in it. So, of course, when like, I was watching, I'm like, oh, this is boring, I'll never play an RPG. And then down the line, like, I was given the opportunity to try, you know, different RPGs, and then I was like, wow, these are actually pretty cool. You know, they have great art design, you have great, in some cases, you have really great stories. Like, two RPGs that have really stuck with me through time have been Final Fantasy IV and Chrono Trigger. And those two games have been, like, two of the most amazing experiences. Like, to this day, those are the ones that I feel like, you know, you have all these more innovations. There have been sequel after sequel and more iterations and, like, better improved graphics and mechanics. But I still just love Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy IV. Those are the ones that just made such a deep impression on me. And, like I said before, I love seeing different kinds of games. I'll give them a shot. If they don't click with me, that's fine. But I always love to give them a shot and, like, see. There's probably not a game out there that I genuinely and say I dislike or hate, well, unless I'm playing it and I get frustrated with, you know, or something like that. But yeah, there's not a game out there I can honestly say I hate.
That's
so.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the intensity aspect of it, like, that makes you kind of want to stick with it, or because I meant like a fire game will be so much more intense than the role playing, and that's maybe what keeps you.
I mean, it's just different. Aspects of each different kind of game that keep you engaged. Like for fighting games, it's that, you know, that competitive, you know, fighting setup. For RPGs, it's like, you know, the story and like the music is amazing.
Yeah.
Like for and then for like an adventure game, it's like these crazy mechanics or this crazy art design. And so it's something, this is like every game has just got to have some kind of hook, and then if it hooks you, then it's like, well, it's got your attention for a good while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you still travel to tournaments or like conventions or like, is there something that, you know what, this is happening, I'm going to go? Like.
Absolutely. You know, like smaller tournaments that are held at like, you know, those like Emporium Arcade, like actually this coming Sunday, they're going to have a WCW versus NWO arcade tournament for Nintendo 64.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys ever played that like way back in the day, but it was a wrestling game and it was a lot of fun because you could plug four controllers in, and it was four, you know, it was 2-on-2 or 4-on-4, whatever you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, if you're not going to participate, it's still fun to just go and watch
right.
and see these guys play. It's really fun. I still love traveling to like conventions where they have impromptu
yeah.
tournaments. Actually, Chicago is the site for one of the is a qualifier for the Evo tournament
right.
in July. They're not sure if they're going to have it next year, but fingers crossed that they do. Yeah, it's just a great thing to see, you know, to bring people out from different backgrounds and different cultures and see how they interact and how they, you know, this is the game that brings them together, and to see, like, how they play and how they approach it is a really cool thing.
Okay.
So.
Okay. But you, like, do you, like, you know, 20 years old, when you're young,
mm-hmm.
would you, like, say that you're more, like, had to go, or, like, now it's still the same?
When I was younger, it was weird because it took me a little longer to learn how to play a fighting game. I was actually really terrible at fighting games
yeah.
for the longest time. And then, you know, over the course of time, just having those skills kind of build up, and, like, I consider myself halfway decent now. You know, back then I didn't have a car, so, you know, like, driving a bike or, like, if it was too far to go by bike, I couldn't go.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, I have, you know, mobility, I can
yeah.
go wherever I want, it's, I would love to go and
yeah.
see, you know, I still haven't gone to an Evo yet.
Yeah.
But I would really love to see an Evo tournament, so.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously different game requires different kind of skill set, but
mm-hmm.
do you think that, for example, you take a player that's like 20 years ago and
mm-hmm.
say, you know, come to play this new game right now. Do you
mm-hmm.
think they require the same skill set, or do you think the skill set had to change like a little bit over time in like communication or something like that? I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think, you know, the baseline skills to be a good gamer, you know, having good hand-eye coordination and reflexes and being able to see mechanics, you know, as they play out on the screen. I think those kind of skills are, you know, inherent in any
right.
good gamer. For something like a fighting game,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, they've remained largely the same. Like,
right.
there's, you know, like, Street Fighter basically just came forward and put down instituted this kind of system, and everyone just kind of, you know, copied the template. You know,
yeah.
you have the quarter circle forward with the punch and, you know, the dragon punch motion, and everyone, like, sticks to that. And so that kind of makes it easier for some people to
right.
just jump in and kind of, you know, be able to play that.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm. I see. Do you think what has game does game make like an impact on you, or do you think the game has made an impact on other people? Like, let's say in your life or in your hobby, or
mm-hmm.
do you think that it has made an impact on you?
Absolutely, just in, like, every aspect of, you know, not, like I mentioned before, that, you know, when you play a game, you know, it's not just the, like, actual playing it, but, like, you know, the music, the artwork. So, like, friends of mine have, you know, original artwork from the game. They play the music on their stereos. They have that impact, like, it's impacted them and, like, followed them through the course of their lives. I can say, like, a good chunk of the friends that I've met, like, in the later half of my life, you know, from New York and San Francisco, I would not have met without that common ground of video games. I was temporarily a freelance video game reviewer for a publication out in San Francisco, and I made a lot of my industry contacts through, you know, through being out there and, like, meeting them. And having this common background of this common love of games and video games and all
okay.
come together like that.
Okay,
so.
Is that just one part of your career that has made an impact, or do you think that even like your career choice kind of has?
Yeah, I can definitely say that. Like, you know, like as a freelance writer, like there's other things I write about. Like, you know, video games is a huge part of like geek culture right now.
Yeah.
Like, along with like certain television shows and movies.
Yeah.
And so you have that aspect, you know, and it all kind of crosses over and bleeds over and has, you know, cross appeal. So, like, when you see a movie about, you know, like a video game or a comic book, and then, you know, the comic book about a video game, and it comes back and forth. So, like, for me personally, like, somebody who, you know, still reads comic books and still watches shows like The Flash
yeah.
or sees movies like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it all comes, you know, it stems forth and it's all cross-pollinating between the things that came before and setting new like, breaking new ground, you know, for the future. And so you have this whole, you know, this whole cross-pollination of ideas. And, like, a lot of that stems from video games, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Do you have any, like, hobbies or interests, like, besides video games? Or is just, it's just pretty much, like, it takes a little longer time?
Yeah. Actually, I've got a ton of different hobbies. I love reading.
Okay.
Just all different kind of books. One of my favorite genre books is autobiographies.
Right.
Like learning about the real life stories of people, because sometimes the truth is a lot stranger
than
anything you can make up. I love watching movies.
Yeah.
Movies are like cinema has been a big part of my life recently. Just seeing a lot of different kinds of movies in recent history. I love to swim.
Okay.
I love to play basketball. I love watching basketball.
Yeah.
What else? Yeah, just a lot of interests outside of.
Okay.
I love writing as well. Like I mentioned before, a huge collector of toys and action figures.
Okay.
Like vintage toys and action figures, and so just a lot of different interests outside of video games.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I see. What do you study? What was your major in college?
When I was in undergrad, I was studying biology.
Okay.
With a particular focus in biochemistry.
Okay.
And then I thought I was going to go into, like, you know, healthcare, but
right.
then it just didn't, I just, it's, at some point in my junior year, I was like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And so I just kind of, just started studying, like, different things, like, studied anthropology,
right.
Psychology, just to get a different feel of like what else is out there.
Okay.
I took some freelance journalism classes,
mm-hmm.
Classes about social media and marketing and things like that.
Right.
And just so those are the kind of things that I definitely have like more focus and passion for than science. I still love science. I love learning about science and technology and reading about all that stuff. But I also love telling people about it. I love. Making it relatable and like bringing it forward to other people as well. So,
okay. Just like interesting because like, do you ever see yourself become like a game? Because this is what a lot of people like dreams like for really pro gamers. Like, oh, I want to become a game developer. Like,
mm-hmm.
do you ever have that kind of thought, or is it just not? I'm just gonna play the game.
Kind of like,
okay.
like just in flights of fancy. Like one thing that another aspect of gaming that has really taken off is mobile gaming.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people are making it big with, like, making apps or, like, cute little games that,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, that become viral and just take off.
Right.
I think it would be cool to, like, just to learn that skill set.
Right.
And just see what it goes into it. And to have that kind of, you know, just to learn the ins and outs of it. At the same time, I have friends that, you know, that were part of, you know, the video game journalism business,
yeah.
and they crossed over to the development side, and just hearing private conversations of, like, you know, like, not meeting deadlines and stressing out and, you know, having to stay over and, like, you know, when a game doesn't sell a certain amount of copies and people flip out, and
mm-hmm.
it's a really stressful environment to be part of, and I mean, of course, that's part of the creative process,
right.
and I respect them for going through that. I just don't know if I would
right.
particularly want to be part of that.
Okay.
So,
do you play any mobile games or like?
A few, not too many. Like, I try to. I actually just got a smartphone last year. This is my first smartphone, and just kind of messing around with it. I have never played a single game of Angry Birds.
Okay.
I never played a single game of
Flappy Birds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any of that.
Oh, interesting.
But as a platform, you know, you can't deny it that, you know, it's like the easiest way to get gaming into somebody's, you know,
mm-hmm.
into somebody's hands, because it's like, oh, I have this smartphone, I have it for like internet and everything else. Oh, I can download a game for free or for like $1. I'll give it a
mm-hmm.
shot, and then, you know, that's a good way to get gaming into their hands and keep that, you know, gaming in kind of, you know, people consciously thinking about it, so,
yeah.
yeah.
And it's Is it like very, very different from, you know, a classic arcade, or do you think that it's a lot easier, harder, or the same?
I mean, it's just a different platform, because what you have to do is, like, for any good game, you gotta be able to know what platform you're on,
right,
and just be able to play to its strengths, because, you know, you don't have, can't actually have buttons and
right.
a joystick on
right,
a
right, right.
on a smartphone, so you gotta kind of take advantage of just the limited screen space
yeah.
you have, and just use the mechanics for that. Like, there have been really a few really good games on the mobile platform that have made a, you know, a significant impact,
yeah.
and, you know, are, can be considered, you know, these are world-class games, these are actually really valid, fully developed and fully mature games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would never, like, look down on, you know, because it's on a mobile platform,
right,
oh, it's
yeah,
terrible,
yeah, yeah.
No, no, it's, you know, if it's a good game is a good game, and just being able to take advantage of the platform and the limitations and the abilities of whatever platform you're on.
Okay.
So,
I see.
Some of the games that you have currently hold records in, I haven't heard of.
Okay.
What are these, you know, like the publishers? Are they mainly, like, I don't know, Capcom? Or
yeah, most of them are Capcom. Like, the X-Men game is a Capcom game.
Mm-hmm.
Capcom vs. SNK 2 is a... Well, that was actually a cooperative project between Capcom and SNK. Samurai Shodown is a fighting game series published by SNK. And I don't know if you know this, but SNK was responsible for the Neo Geo home console back in the day. It was this massive beast. It was basically an arcade cabinet, like, condensed down into a console, and had this ridiculous $600 price tag, and the games were $200. So basically, you were basically shoving, like, a gigantic, like, arcade, like, a board into this console and playing the game. So you're getting the actual arcade experience, but you're paying at least $800 to play this ridiculous thing. The other game I mentioned, Ninja Baseball Batman, that's from a Japanese company called IREM, I-R-E-M. And I don't know if they're still in business, if they're still publishing, but yeah, so a lot of these games are, you know, from those old school developers,
yeah, okay.
so, and publishers. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So from your world record, like, which one has, like, the most, like, you know, the rush or, like, the excitement? Is the first one? Is it the recent, most recent one? Or is it, like, the middle one? Like, do you remember which one?
Definitely. I mean, just because I've been going back and forth with that friend of mine,
yeah.
you know, so much over the last 3 years, it's definitely Capcom versus SNK2, because we're the ones constantly pushing that high score higher and higher. It's always fun to just see, like, how people, like, they try to take your score, they just want to learn how to
yeah.
play it, and it makes that competitive nature just, you know, really a lot more fun, and just makes it, you know, that much more exciting when they try to come in and they say, I'm going to take your score today, and this is kind of
okay.
fun to have that competitive nature.
Well, was the first record, like expected, or was it like, wow, I didn't...
Well, when I looked at the score, I was like, I can do that. And just kind of seeing the card, and I was like, I can do that. And so I put down, you know, sat down at the machine and just started playing. And I was like, I messed up. And then the fourth try, I was like, yes,
yeah.
I got it. And then it was like a really great feeling. And then that score didn't stand for like another 6 months. And 6 months later, my friend took it back, and I was like, oh man, I got to come back in, and I got to do it again. And so it just go back and forth like that. It was a really great thing.
Okay.
So.
So, but I'm guessing, like, does it, like, gives you, like, you know, a little bit, not so much paranoid, but, like, does it, like, fear that, oh, somebody's going to take your game?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You got to keep practicing?
Yeah, definitely, because it's, like, sometimes when a score sits for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody takes it, it's like, oh, man, somebody took it, I never thought anyone was going to take it.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I got to get back in shape, I got to learn, I got to train again, I got to remember the mechanics and the timing and everything, and then... So it kind of keeps those competitive fires going. You know, like with my friends, like one of the things that, you know, my college friends and my high school friends that I can only play online with, that was one of the great things that keeps our friendship alive. There's always something to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Is like, oh man, you know, those last two matches, you know, I could have taken you if I didn't mess
up.
And it's like,
yeah.
So it always, that competitive nature just keeps it, you know, keeps it fresh and exciting. So,
okay. So, what kind of advice would you give someone like who wants to become like, you know, very, very competitive, like gamer? Like, do you
competitive gamer?
So do you think like
what kind of advice would they give them?
Yeah, kind of advice.
Well, like with anything, like that you want to take up and like you know, it's frustrating when you're not good at it right away. I would probably say, you know, the simple things like, you know, just keep at it because,
yeah.
you know, nobody was ever born good
yeah.
at anything. So you just got to keep trying and keep practicing. For specifically fighting games, I would definitely recommend reading The Art of War by
okay.
Sun Tzu,
wow.
which is, I know that sounds ridiculous,
yeah.
but it's just kind of this idea of, you know, of strategizing and being able to, you know, this entire philosophy, not that doesn't just apply to video games, but to life and then,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
you know, moving forward, you know, in life. So, yeah, The Art of War is, like, a great thing. Maybe start watching competitive,
yeah.
Competitive poker playing and see, like, how opponents, you know, try to psych each other out.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, as much as a video game is about your physical skills, in a competitive video game, it's also about being able to play your opponent.
Right.
And being able to control the situation, being in control at all times. That's the most important thing about being, not just in video games, but in life and in sports and in anything,
mm-hmm.
is being in control of what you your situation and what you can do, and then let everything else outside that sphere to just kind of just take its course. Because the only thing you can control is you and
yeah.
like your skill set, and then everything else you just kind of let happen.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Is managing your emotions like part of it, or do you think that's an okay skill?
Oh, that's part of it. Like some people, you know, they're fueled off their passion, and like, you know, they get excited, they get pumped, and they get, you know, they get rowdy and loud. And some guys, they just keep it all inside. They're a quiet storm, and they control of their emotions until they have the victory,
yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah,
they
yeah.
let it all out. So it's just it will just play to your personality. I think it's just to have an idea of like, well, this is the kind of person, you know, this is my personality, I'm just going to let it show.
Yeah.
You know, it's like being able to just, you know, utilize your personality and your skills and, you know, to the best of your advantage, and then, you know, try to just go with the flow with it.
Okay.
So
you know, do you think that an aggressive player versus
mm-hmm.
like a, you know, like a quiet player,
mm-hmm.
is there like a, which one of them are usually better, or is it like mixed? Like
it's a mix,
because,
I mean, you can see, you know, sometimes the loudmouth, like the big talker, sometimes he's the one who doesn't have any skills
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And the quiet little guy that comes in is like the world champ. You'll never know until
yeah.
you actually get in front of the machine and start
yeah.
playing. And that's like the great equalizer. It's like, you know, you have a big tough guy or little small guy, and it's like on the screen, this player is the one that has the advantage,
yeah.
that holds all the strength. So
yeah.
I think it's just a great
because,
way to see it.
I understand, like, you know, in poker, you kind of have to be very, like, I'm just guessing that you have to be a little bit more poker face, a little
mm-hmm.
more, like, calm. That's
I mean, sometimes you can use that at your advantage. Like, some
yeah.
people think that if you look at a player long enough, you'll be able to see their tells. Well, if they know that they're
yeah.
giving a tell, that they can do that and psych out their opponent
yeah.
and then be able to trap them and, you know, be able to take them for all their money.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, just being able, that idea of being able to, you know, seeing your opponent and then, you know, sizing him up and then, like, you know, it's basically, you know, point counterpoint. Like, so, like, it's like a chess match. Like, just being able to, you know, think like a few moves in advance and seeing how they're going to react and how you're going to react, and then just going back and forth and just seeing who's going to outlast the other person.
Okay.
So.
I see.
So on the topic of difficulty
mm-hmm.
on games, do you think there's a positive correlation between how difficult something is and how fun it is?
Yeah, I think at some point it's, you know, like, a classic example that everyone used to think about is, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this game called Ghosts and Goblins. It's the most ridiculous arcade game ever, because not only do you have to go through the game, which progressively gets harder and harder and harder,
yeah.
when you reach the end of the game, they tell you, oh no, this is not the true ending. You have to go all the way back to the beginning of the first stage and do this game completely over again. And fight the final boss again, and if you beat him that time, then you get the real ending. And it's just like, oh my god, this is like the most impossible game, and you're asking me to do it twice? It's like the most ridiculous thing. So a game like that, like, some people will stick with it, and, like, you know, they see the difficulty, like, I know I have to do it twice, I know it's going to be this long, it's going to be this hard, and, you know, they're fine with it. And then you get games that just have, like, you know, broken mechanics or, you know, sloppy graphics, you know, these things that just kind of... It's a broken game, and, you know, you're basically... It's like trying to run a race when you have one broken leg, you know, when you have broken mechanics like that.
Yeah.
And people who can, like, muscle through that and actually beat the game like that, that takes...
Mm-hmm.
That's an impressive set of perseverance and skill, too.
Okay.
So...
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's all a matter of the difficulty, whether it's because the game is inherently challenging or if it's just cheap and unfair. And, sometimes you get a mix of both. And so it just kind of depends.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For the challenge aspect of
mm-hmm.
it, do you think that, you know, the popularity of, you know, Ticket Redemption or, like, the high score, which one do you think what motivates you?
For me personally, I think it's just being able to put your name out there and say you're the best at something.
Yeah.
I think that's a really huge motivating factor. Like a game that you know that a lot of people are playing and that, you know, gets a lot of recognition. When you set an impressive standard on that, then that, of course, that's going to keep you pretty excited and pumped. And then when you have, like, a smaller game, like, that nobody has even heard of... and nobody ever plays, and you have a world record on that, it's not going to feel as satisfying, as, you know, exciting, because nobody's paying attention to it. So I just, that idea of it, so.
Okay. If you have to choose a game that kind of represents the coin-op industry,
mm-hmm.
like the coin-op world,
mm-hmm.
which game would you tell, like, you know, a person who's, like, totally new, it's like, what games represents the coin-op?
I hate to say it, but it's probably Street Fighter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, this will seem weird to you guys, but at the time, you know, Street Fighter was more than just a game. When it landed, everyone was just blown away. It was like, what is this game? And then this was before the internet and, you know, before anyone could spread the word around. It just caught word of mouth and everyone was talking about it. Street Fighter is one of those games that's not only endured, but basically, you know, it's thrived through the passage of time. Like, people who grew up playing it as kids are now, you know, these pro-level tournament players now, and, you know, they're keeping the name out there, they're keeping it, you know, in the social consciousness of people, of video gamers. And, you know, it's Street Fighter has permeated to other things. You know, you have, like, video games, you got toys, you got movies, you got... You know, it's music and everything. It's kind of just everything is out there. In terms of the coin-op industry, I think that's probably one of the biggest ones.
Okay.
I honestly can't think of another one that would... No, I can't.
Yeah.
I really can't.
Okay.
So
how it relates to that, like, if you think that the coin-op industry, you know,
mm-hmm.
has to survive in the long run, like,
mm-hmm.
What do you think, like, their challenges are, or what do you think, like, their strength are? Like,
mm-hmm.
what do you think?
Well, as an industry, you know, basically, in this country, video games are pretty much dead. Like, the only, like, large video games that you really see, like, coming out and being mass-produced now are, like, you know, those big, like, light gun games that you see at, like, at Dave & Buster's or, like, GameWorks. I mean, there's nothing wrong with those games. They're still fun, but there's something to be said about, you know, those smaller coin-op cabinets that, you know, that only cost a quarter to play and you didn't have to swipe a card or anything like that. One aspect that a friend told me is that there's still a great deal of creativity and innovation that can be found in arcade cabinets, and not just arcade cabinets, but those big machines that you ride in or that have, you know, sound effects and music and flashing lights and all this crazy stuff. I don't ever think it'll go away completely. I think it'll just continue to be... It'll continue to be dictated by, like, what people, you know, continue to play and whatnot. And then you'll still have certain companies and certain publishers that will make, you know, crazy machines for, like, you know, amusement parks or for, like... You know, those redemption kind of arcades, like Dave & Buster's and
mm-hmm.
GameWorks. So you'll have basically, you know, you'll have the old cabinets that are still existing, still being maintained by a small population, and you'll still have these big machines over here, and You'll be able to just see it going back and forth, I think.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Do you like kind of set like a mini tournament around your friends, or like, I mean, you guys are competing with each other, but like, do you see yourself doing that, like just kind of set up a tournament that, or that's like,
that's something it kind of is a hassle.
Yeah.
It's just. Like when UFGT was the EVO qualifier here in Chicago,
right.
And that just the one that was just here this past April, that was my no past March, that was my first one like attending in person,
mm-hmm.
And just the amount of manpower and the amount of time and dedication that goes into it, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
I definitely appreciated what Adam did. Like he was the one running it. I definitely appreciated what he did. You know, running it and like making sure it ran smoothly and everything, but I don't think I'd ever do something
like that
on my own time. But I think it's just more fun, like when you get with your friends and you talk trash, and then sometimes they want to do something, they make a bet, like, oh, if I win this match, you have to take a shot, or you have to buy me dinner or something. Stupid like that. So,
Okay, that's cool. What is your view on like, you know, joysticks versus like handle, like, you know,
versus.
Handle games, like games with gun pieces.
Oh, they both have their. I mean, they both have their. You know, their fans and their detractors. I think, like light gun games. I think those are still a lot of fun. Like one of the light gun games in the arcade that I loved a lot was Alien 3.
Oh, okay.
That was a really fun one. And then recently there was one based off the Terminator movie series.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun too. Those kind of games are a lot of fun to play, and like, and then as opposed to something that you control like a character on screen, you know, it's just a different kind of, you know, just a different aspect of the game, and they both, you know, they're both fun to play for different reasons.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So, but you know, your favorite is it joysticks or is it like gun pieces or is it like even like mouse like on computer?
Oh,
or,
I see.
Which one is your favorite?
It just really depends on the game. Like, a real-time strategy, the only real way to play that was, you know, mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then for, like, a light gun game, the best way, of course, is to have, like, an actual gun. And then, like, you know, for Street Fighter, obviously, you want to play joystick and buttons. So, it really just depends on the game and the platform it's on.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about... those arcade equipment, like,
mm-hmm.
do you think that it was like a really cool invention, like racing simulators, you know, special
mm-hmm.
mission cabinets, like,
mm-hmm.
like what were your views?
Oh, those are terrific. Yeah, though there's so much, like I said, so much innovation and creativity you can find there. One of the games that I recently discovered was did you guys ever hear of a game series called F-Zero? Did you know that there's an F-Zero arcade machine?
No.
Yeah, there's an F-Zero arcade machine. It was a project between Nintendo, Sega, and Namco. And basically, Nintendo handled all the programming, and Sega and Namco basically put up the hardware. And so basically, it's this giant harness that you're actually able to sit in, and there's seatbelts and everything. And you're actually able to drive and control, like, you know, the different cars and everything. And it is a really, really cool experience. Like, it's actually, like, playing. Like, you could never replicate this on a home system, and that's the kind of thing, experience that you could only get in an arcade. I think that's, like, those kind of games are just really
mm-hmm.
amazing and just really, really fun to have.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think about the Oculus, like, Rift system? Do you think that would really, really, like, improve your... Like, are you excited about it?
I mean, that's the thing about... 3D as a medium is one of those tricky kind of things, because like in movie theaters, I'm not a fan of 3D movies, basically because they haven't perfected the technology yet. When they reach a point where you're able to have a 3D movie without having like glasses and any sort of outside equipment, then I think, you know, 3D is really going to take off. In terms of Oculus, you know, that whole kind of immersion kind of thing, I think that's an important step to take, you know, these kind of baby steps towards, you know, improving and perfecting a technology. Like, a few years ago, like, we were thinking to ourselves, oh, there's never going to be, like, motion gaming. Well, then the Wii came out, and then, you know, we have the Kinect now, and then PlayStation Move, and, you know, these are kind of, like, small, and, like, you know, it hasn't been a perfect system, it hasn't been perfected, but, you know, these small kind of steps that they need to take, and, like, they have to make mistakes, and then say, okay, well, the next time we know not to do that, we know to make this better. And, you know, so technology like Oculus, I think it's going to be really amazing. At some point, my friend was, like, saying, at some point, you are actually going to be the character in the video game. Like,
right.
Like Star Trek, the whole idea of the holodeck and,
yeah.
like, being able to full immersion, and that's a really great... I think we're still a few years off from that, but
mm-hmm.
Oculus, I think, is a step in that right direction.
Okay.
So...
Mm-hmm. We are at
hour 10. Hour 10? Okay. Do you have any questions?
Okay. So were there professional players when you started out? Like, when you first picked up, you know,
Street Fighter?
Yeah. Was there someone you could look up to, or were they not really...
Well, at that time, arcades were kind of a sketchy kind of place where, you know, it was really dark inside, and, like, you could smoke inside. There's all these terrible things, and basically you would meet, like, some shady guy at playing Street Fighter, and he'd be like, hey, if you give me $1, I'll teach you how to throw a fireball or something like that, you know? That was kind of how it worked. And so at that aspect, you know, we didn't have... like, tournaments, we didn't have, like, organized, you know, we didn't have, like, a community where we all rallied together and we got organized and we, you know, moved the medium forward. We were just basically trying to, just playing this game and just kind of figuring it out as we went along. Man, if there was professional gaming back then, I think that would have just blown my mind. I was like, I can make a career out of this? It's amazing, yeah, but, yeah, at the time we didn't have that. Like, it wasn't until, like, you know, I kind of moved away slightly from video games and, like, was more focused on, like, school and high school and, you know, socializing, making new friends and stuff like that. And then back in when I got to college, it was like, oh, you know, somebody brought the video game system. Oh, somebody's got Street Fighter. Let's play. And then, you know, that kind of just rekindled it all over again. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What currently do you own right now? Maybe not just consoles, but, like, do you own any other?
Currently, right now, I own a PS3
yeah.
and a Nintendo DS,
mm-hmm.
Nintendo 3DS.
Yeah.
Just kind of tooling around. Right now on 3DS, kind of just playing Tomodachi Life a little bit.
Yeah.
I just picked that up just for fun.
Yeah.
And then for PS3, just kind of playing Street Fighter, you know, with my friends, you know, keeping, you know, staying with my friends, like,
okay.
keep playing online with them and whatnot. So, and then... a lot of my time, like, when I go gaming is to, you know, actual arcades, you know,
yeah.
like the one out in Brookfield. So that's where, you know, a lot of my gaming time is going
okay.
to.
Do those pro players actually own, like, an arcade player? Like, do you think that's not, like, a thing for you to own one at home?
Oh, like, to have cabinets
yeah.
at home?
Yeah. I don't think it's realistic now, but that before, back then.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, that was, like... if you had an arcade cabinet in your house, like, in your bedroom or something, you're like, oh my god, he's so rich and, like, all this crazy stuff. As, you know, as we've gotten older and, like, gotten more nostalgic for those kind of times, I have friends now that tell me, you know, oh, I just bought a Donkey Kong cabinet, it's
yeah.
in my living room.
Yeah.
Got stuff like that.
We actually need to get going. There's another person that has a reservation.
Sure.
So if there's anything, you know, that we didn't ask...
No,
you
like, I'm fine. Like, if you guys have anything last minute you want to ask me before we have to... Or did you want to reschedule for more time? Was this good enough, or...?
We might have...
That's right, you guys,
it's
due tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have an hour and 10 minutes of...
Material?
Okay.
Whatever you need to do.
Yeah. Cool.
Alright.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hit stop or record.